good idea. Get up here.
How do you go to work?
How old are you, kid?
15. And the name's Danny, not kid.
Well, when you grow up, you'll know these things, Danny. Now get up here and piss in the radiator.
And welcome back again to Throwback Reviews Podcast. I think we said that the last time on episode 41 at Weekend at Bernie's. We had a little hiatus before that show, and that was, I believe, 2 months ago. So it's summertime. We're busy. It's vacation season and just a lot of scheduling conflicts. So, but we are back. It is episode 42, where we're going to be talking about the 1984 classic Red Dawn. My name is Sean, but let me introduce my co-host here, Mr. Rob Flack-O'Hare.
It's not Flack anymore. It's Wolverine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Rob Wolverine O'Hare.
No, it's Rob Aardvark O'Hare.
Yeah. How's it going, man?
It's going, like I said in the intro, it's summer break and kids are doing this, and I've been on vacation. We were going to record this episode a few weeks ago, and some scheduling conflicts happened, and then I believe you went on vacation, then yeah. I went on vacation, and then I was like, I need a vacation after vacation to get things settled and all that kind of stuff. But
is that a sign of getting old? I do that now. Like, if I could schedule one day on the end of my vacation for like a vacation from my vacation, like that one day to come back and just get everything back in order, make sure laundry's done, make sure, before you go back to work. I hate just coming in, like on a Sunday from vacation and going right to work on Monday. It's hard, man. We're old.
Yeah, I don't like that. And it's nice because the vacation that we took, I went down to Ocean City, New Jersey, went down to the shore for a week, and it ran from Saturday to Saturday. So that way I was able to come home Saturday afternoon and then have all day Sunday to just kind of, we unpack Saturday night, but just a little rest time in between going back to where I hate that getting home on a Sunday afternoon and then you got to rush back to work the next morning. So I don't think it's that we're getting old. It's just that, we're parents now and we have things, we have other responsibilities that we have to do, but cause I'll tell you, it's like my kids are like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm really, you did nothing. You sat in a car and played on your tablet while dad
exactly.
Drove
exactly. Did you guys, so you went to like the beach and stuff. Is that what y'all did?
Yeah, yeah, we went to, we rented a beach house for a week with my friend Jason and his wife and his son, Jason, my co-host on the Average Runner podcast. So it was good. We had a really, really good time. Great weather and it was a good time.
That's cool.
Where'd you go?
Well, for vacation, my wife had a work meeting down in Fort Worth, Texas, which is really only about 4 hours from here, but it's straight south, which means the further south you go, the more hot it is, and it was in June. So, but we have for work, they give you like a set amount of money you can spend on a hotel. And she managed to find this bed and breakfast that was the same price, as the hotel was going to be. So she got this bed and breakfast. It was like an apartment above a garage, mm-hmm. And, so I was like, I'm just going to take vacation. My kids had already planned a trip to go with their grandma to go on a road trip. So I was just going to sit here alone. So I thought, I'll go down there. So we went down to Fort Worth and I did a bunch of antiquing. That's what I do now that I'm old. And it's funny because the stuff I look for is the stuff nobody else is looking for. Like I go into these antique malls that have old plates, old furniture, you know, little, oh, snow globes and things like that. Here's what I come out with: a crocheted ET, two lunch boxes, one with Muppet babies, and I think a Sesame Street lunchbox, a couple of Star Wars. I mean, I'm like, I'm the guy that picks up all the stuff that all the other people there don't buy. But
yeah, and it's not antique stuff. It's all the childhood retro stuff. So you went retroing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what we should call it. We should call it retroing. But yeah, I had a good time just driving around, and you know, we ate at different places and stuff like that. And now, man, I know you covered some of these apps back, like when you did Android. What is that? Android?
Android App Addicts.
App Addicts, yeah. But, you know, there was a time where, like, when we were kids, you would go to a strange town or something, and you're like, well, what do we do here? Now, you know, I drop my wife off at work, and then I just punch in my phone. Like, I got this one app that's called Things Around Me or something. I think it's just called Around Me. And I punch in that, and I type in thrift store, and it goes, well, here's the nearest 50 thrift stores, you know, and here's how to get to them. And you just punch, punch, punch on your phone, and that's it, you know. And then when you get hungry, you're like, hey, where's the nearest tacos? Oh, here they are. And, you know, between that and Google Maps and everything, you can get around anywhere.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say I used to use, like, different apps for everything, but something like that, now I just use – I'll use Google Maps because usually that'll give you a pretty good idea of what to do.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to, you know, it's funny you mentioned that you went to the beach and stuff. We have, I mean, the beaches here, all the water in Oklahoma is like red dirt, you know, like you go to the lake and it's going to be, it's not water you can see through or anything like that, but we got a water park that's real close to us. So we got a season pass for that. So we've been going there, which is nice because when you got the season pass, you don't feel like you have to go there for, you know, 12 hours
to
get your money's worth. You could just go for a little bit and leave or whatever. And so I've been taking the kids to that. My wife got her annual concussion.
What?
Yeah, she's a – first of all, my wife – for all the things that she does, I mean, you know, when she was younger, she taught rappelling, she taught, kayaking, she taught sailboating, all these different things. For being as coordinated in that stuff, she is a complete klutz. I mean, she is constantly, I've taken her to the emergency room more times than I can count. I mean, just, you know, she stepped on a nail one time, she cut her foot open one time, she fell off something one time, and she's all, and now, and she hits her head on stuff all the time, which is not funny, but she's on a Pinterest kick right now. And so she bought this big giant clock and she hung it up on the wall and then she turned around and it fell on her head.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, she's always worried. She's like, are my pupils different sizes? And I look and I'm like, yeah, a lot. Like, it's really, you don't look so good. And she was forgetting stuff and all this. And so, that was Saturday, so we took her to the doctor on Sunday, and he's like, yeah, you got a pretty serious concussion. And
oh, jeez.
So, which is like, hey, what reminded me of that is the she got one last year at the water park. She went down one of the slides and, like, didn't stop at the end and hit her head on the wall. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so she's like a regular, you know, at the hospital. They know her. But the good news is the doctor said, you know, she's not supposed to do anything, no strenuous thinking is one of her things right now. And like,
yeah, that'll work out quite well for her job.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't. Yeah. Well, they told her, you know, you should take a couple days off work and you're not supposed to make any important life decisions is one of the things they told her. But I was like, you know, what's great? I got all these awesome 80s movies and you don't have to think. You can just sit right here on the couch. And I made her, you know, some Kool-Aid, and we sat down. I was like, what do you want to watch? You want to watch some Breaking? You want to watch Thrashing? You want to watch – and she says it's all hurting her head more. So I'm not allowed to pick any more movies for her.
Yeah, I could see how Breaking would do that to you. Well, I hope she's feeling better soon.
Yeah, she's she'll be fine.
Got put a helmet on her next time.
That's what I told her.
You go to the water park, you gotta get her a helmet.
She, they have a, a thing that they do here every winter at the ballpark. They got a big, huge baseball field downtown, and they come in and they build like an artificial slide, and they put snow on it, and they have big giant inner tubes. And it costs a few bucks, but it's a thing where kids could go to. So we went to that a few years ago, and I was sitting on the side. I'm like, I'm not doing that. That looks dangerous, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm sitting on the side, and I see the kids start going down, and then I see Susan, and she goes, the guy that's supposed to catch her didn't catch her, and she goes right past and then hit her head on the wall. And I was like, I bet she got a concussion. Sure enough, she did. I honestly think this is number five for her. You can't take that when you're our age.
No, you can't. I wonder if it's something after you've had a couple, it's like you're more susceptible to, you know, during a little bit of head injury to get another one or something.
Someone told me, I guess there's a line on Archer where somebody got a concussion and he said, well, you know, you get like three free ones, right? So
that's a funny show.
Yeah. So I think she's passed her free ones. So,
you know what? And we're going to get into this, but it's like, it's talking about Archer and just cartoons like that, where you have to explain to your 13-year-old son why he can't watch things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cartoon. Yeah. It's not just a cartoon. My kids have been lobbying
for TVs and, you know, to have cable in their room, which when I was their age, I think I did. You know, but it just seems like things were different back then. And so every time that they ask my wife, you know, then after they go to bed, I flip over to South Park and I leave it on for about 5 minutes. And I'm like, this is what your kids want to watch in their room.
Yeah, you're right. And we had this conversation and I've actually used you because Ethan, my oldest son, Ethan calls Rob Uncle Rob when Rob came to visit and everything. And he's like, I love Rob. He's like an uncle. He's awesome. And so Ethan's been, you know, harping on me to get a TV in his room, and he wants to put the PlayStation there and all this, you know, all this stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I'm like, look, I don't, Nicole is like totally against it. And I was kind of like, well, maybe because of the same reason you said, I think I had one as a kid. We had a little black and white where we got like two channels and we'd watch like Three Stooges on the weekends with my brother, or we'd watch, you know, like Godzilla or Kung Fu Theater. But, yeah, I was like, look, Rob's not letting Mason have one either, and he's the same age as you. And he's like, oh, all right.
You tell him Uncle Rob said no.
Yeah, that bought me a little time. So, but anyways, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when I was like, I think 13, I think these kids age, maybe 14, my buddy Jeff came over, and my parents had gone out for some long deal, like, you know, for a whole day type of thing. And, We had got all this extra coax cable from Radio Shack and one of those little, like a signal booster. And we went up in the attic in a splitter and we split it off and ran cable to my room. So that's why I had cable, is because Jeff knew how to do that. We ran our own line, you know? And I think one day my parents came in and they were like, how'd you get cable? I was like, oh, we just ran it. And so I'm sure if I had asked, they'd have said no, but
yeah,
don't let our kids listen to this. Just tell them no.
They, you know what? They wouldn't know how to do it anyways, at least my kids.
There's no app for it. Yeah, they would be like, I can't find that app. Yeah,
exactly. Can you run the vacuum? And how do I turn it on? Do I double tap it or wipe it? So, but yeah, so like I mentioned at the beginning, scheduling has been crazy, trying to get together. As you notice, it's just Rob and myself. Kevin, the Zerbinator, it's just hard with scheduling. He's got a lot of shows going on, and he's got, his work schedule is completely opposite of, Rob and myself. He works, at night and some afternoons and stuff like that. So, he has stepped down as a host, but he still has a ton of, shows out there. He's got some shows on the Throwback Network, so you got to check him out.
Yeah,
love all of this stuff.
80 by 89. That's a great show. I love that show. And I think he's doing some new ones, you know. And maybe in the future we could get back. You know, we had that time for a while where we had different guests on and stuff. So who knows? Maybe in the future, you know, have people come on as a guest, or have Zerb stop by for a guest or something like that.
Yeah. And also he's doing Please Stand By, which is a show I did with him. I think I did 3 episodes. And again, it was a scheduling thing. It's just, it's hard when you have kids and work and just everything, to fit in all these shows. But, now Ferg does it with them, and I got to be honest, this is one of my, I love that show. It definitely cracks me up. But, so yeah, but, you know, yeah, maybe we get, Kevin on here sometime as a guest. We plan on, having guests on every once in a while, but, not regularly, like, cause we used to do that all the time, but we thought, you know what, we'll just, kind of wing it and see how things go with Rob and myself.
It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work to do that, to juggle all that. Not just schedules, but the technical back end and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Rob and I have pretty similar lives as far as family go and scheduling. So it's easier for him and I to kind of manipulate our timing and call one up like I did tonight and go, hey, can we push it a half hour? Oh, yeah. And then I'm like, hey, can we push it another 10 minutes? So we kind of know our schedules. So that's what that is. But definitely check out his stuff. And there's links to his actual website where he's got even more shows on there. So, and music and all that good stuff. So check out Zurb's stuff. So tonight we are going to be doing Red Dawn. So Rob, I would have to imagine anybody listening to this show has probably seen this movie.
Oh, I would hope so.
You would hope so, but I never really saw Ghostbusters, and one would think that everyone that would listen or be on the show had seen Ghostbusters. So if you listen to that episode, you'll know that I wasn't up on Ghostbusters at the time. So why don't you give us one of your famous short summaries of this movie?
Sure. So when enemy soldiers parachute into the small town of Calumet, Colorado at the beginning of World War III, a handful of high school students and one of their older brothers escape to the mountains to hide, but eventually are forced to fight back after their location is discovered by enemy soldiers. It's a handful of Wolverines fighting back guerrilla style against the enemy in this week's movie, Red Dawn. Let's see what I was able to find out. This movie was released on August 10th, 1984. It is almost 2 hours long at 114 minutes. Had a budget of $4.2 million, which is actually, I mean, it's not bad. And there's a lot of explosions and a lot of tanks and helicopters and stuff. So you can see, I mean, they spent the money. And at the box office, it came in at 38 and almost 38 and a half million. So almost 10 times the investment. I'm surprised we didn't see, well, not on how it ended. I was going to say, surprised there wasn't a sequel, but
well, there was a couple survivors. Couple. I mean, they could have had kids and could have had World War IV.
So let's see. A little trivia.
They waited, what, 40 years and then just remade it, right? Or 30 years and remade it.
Right, exactly. And I bet that one didn't cost no $4 million. Probably $4 million on the trailer alone. Let's see. Calumet, Colorado. A lot of it was filmed in and around the Arapaho National Forest, which is in Colorado. This was the first movie to be released with a PG-13 rating. Now, the Flamingo Kid in 1984 was the first film to actually get a PG-13 rating, but it wasn't released for 5 more months. And so this was the actual first film to be released with PG-13. Now, I had always heard PG-13 being associated with Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but I guess those were films that made them decide that we needed PG-13. But this is the first PG-13 film.
I didn't even know that it was PG-13.
Yeah, and I should probably pay attention later on. We'll talk about the violence and stuff like that, but yeah. Definitely it's not as violent as a lot of the things we see today. It was directed by John Milius. He was one of the writers for the first two Dirty Harry films. He was a screenwriter for Apocalypse Now, and he wrote and directed Conan the Barbarian. And also it was the story and screenplay was actually written by Kevin Reynolds, who is more well known for being a director. He directed Fandango and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves and Waterworld and the Hatfields and McCoys, which came out a few years ago. He was actually friends with Kevin Costner, and he did a lot of Kevin Costner films. And I guess they got in I guess Kevin Costner's in that Fandango as well. And they got in a pretty big fight during Waterworld. And Kevin Reynolds walked away from the movie. And it was like, that was the end of their friendship. So sad. But
drama in Hollywood.
But I think if you got a choice between Waterworld and Red Dawn, I hope you're going to go see Red Dawn.
Of course.
So anyway, that's about the movie. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the people that starred in this film?
Okay, so starting off, we have who I think would be the main character, Patrick Swayze, playing the character Jed. Passed away in 2009, man. It seems like just 2 years ago.
Yeah, that went fast.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone should know Patrick Swayze, but if not, let me refresh your memory. He was in Dirty Dancing, Ghost, Point Break, Roadhouse, The Outsiders, and a ton more movies. We also had C. Thomas Howell, who played Robert, the kind of crazy kid. Also from The Outsiders, E.T., which I forgot he was in that. And a movie that my mother took my brother and I to see after a day of skating at USA Roller Rink, Soul Man. Remember that one?
How awkward would it be today to take your kids to a movie about blackface?
Yeah, that would be that'd be strange. <different. laughs> I don't think we'll be seeing a Soul Man remake.
No, no.
We had Mrs. McFly, Leah Thompson playing Erica.
Oh, yes.
She was also in Howard the Duck, a George Lucas film that I did not see.
You didn't see Howard the Duck?
Did not see Howard the Duck.
I love that movie. That's a great theme. Howard the Duck. Leah Thompson sings it.
Does she?
Later on, yeah, there's a Leah Thompson on Duck love scene.
On Duck? I don't
know. Yes. Yeah. I don't know, which is kind of weird because they're probably on a down comforter too, which is weird. Be like a sex scene on, be laying on human skin.
Yeah. Oh man, I'll have to get that movie, I guess, for we'll sure, right?
Episode 43, I'm telling you.
We had Jennifer Grey, who played her sister, right?
Yeah, I think they're sister. This is pre nose job, Jennifer Grey.
Yeah, she played Tony. You know her as Ferris Bueller's older sister in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and also with Patrick Swayze in Dirty Dancing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had Charlie Sheen. He played Jed's brother, Matt. Ferris Bueller, you reminded me before the show that he was in Ferris Bueller. I was like, did you make a typo there?
Yeah, no, he's the guy that Jennifer Grey runs into in the police station when she gets arrested, yeah. And he's sitting there on the bench or whatever, the super cool guy. Yeah,
it totally slipped my mind. My father took me to see Platoon when I was a kid. Oh. I don't know what year that was, but I was probably a little too young for that. But I think my father and I think everybody else was smoking in the theater still at that time.
Oh, wow.
Young Guns, Major League, Hot Shots, and 2.5 Men, which he is no longer on, right? Or is that show over now? Is that
finally over? It's all over. Hot Shots, man, and Hot Shots Part 2.
Yeah, I think I saw
it. I like that one better. That was the one where it was like Rambo parody.
Yeah, and I've seen parts of them.
He shoots that chicken from the bow and arrow.
That's good. We had Darren Dalton, who played Daryl, also in The Outsiders.
Man, it's like a reunion.
Yeah. And we had Brad Savage, which we talked about before the show. He played Danny. And he was in some Disney films. He was in The Apple Dumpling Gang with Don Knotts and Tim Conway, correct?
Yep. Yep.
Return from Witch Mountain. Was that one of your favorites from?
That's the good one. That's the good the first one was Escape, I think. That's the bad one. Return, that's the good one. That was, and Pratt, they run into it's the – I sound like I'm a expert on – I watched a lot of Disney when I was a kid, man.
I don't care what anyone – you know, there's a lot of Disney hate. I love the old Disney movies.
I love these things. And Tony and Tia are the twins with the psychic powers, and they, they're trying to escape, and they run into this gang of kids, you know, which when you're a kid, you're like, wow, these guys are scary. And now you're like, wow, they're like 10 years old, you know. It's like not nearly as scary. But he was one of the main kids that were in the gang or whatever. That's a good movie.
Yeah, I remember those from, I think it was the Disney Sunday night movie. And was it Colorful World of Disney at that point, or was it Wonderful? I can never remember the
I don't know. The naming. I thought it was Wonderful World. It could be Colorful.
Yeah, maybe it was Wonderful. I'm not sure. Listening to the Retroist talk on that episode, and you even had a little segment on that episode about Disney. But
that's right. About screwed up on the timeline stuff. Yeah,
yeah. Let's see. We also had Aardvark played by Doug Tobey. And there's not much on him other than some appearances on some 80s TV shows that we found. And then we have a character that your son helped us out with, Judd Omen. He played the Nicaraguan captain. And where did Mason notice him from?
He is the hitchhiker from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Mickey, that Pee-wee Herman picks up. And we find out he's an escaped convict and he had been arrested for tearing the tags off of mattresses. And you know what? I left somebody off our list here. The downed captain that they found. Who was that?
Oh, I forgot his name already now. But yeah, we were just talking about him. Before the
Booth
show.
Booth Powers.
Booth Powers, that's right. Yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff. What I remember him for the past probably 5 or 10 years was he played a character on Deadwood in one of the seasons. And he wasn't very nice. But not. I don't think many people in that show were really actually nice. So that's kind of wraps up the main characters. What's that?
I said it's like a who's who, though, man, of 80s, that era of actors. I mean, there's a lot of famous people in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember seeing this on HBO, as that's no surprise. Most of the movies I saw were on HBO. A lot of them were. Watched it a ton of times, man. I mean, I can't even count how many times I had seen this movie. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. This was an HBO movie for me. And I remember our neighbors had one of those big giant metal jungle gyms in their background, like made out of pipe, you know, and you
could,
was almost like two story, like a house, because there was, you could climb up to the first layer and then there was the part almost like an A-frame roof on top of it. You know what I mean? So you could stand up on that too. I mean, it was this big giant, jungle gym thing. And, I remember some of the bigger kids, you know, getting on top and they would just throw their fist up and go, "Wolverine." And I was like, what? Like, I know there's some dogs and cats, but I didn't see any Wolverines in the neighborhood, you know, but, it was around that time. And then I'm sure I saw the movie and figured out what they were talking about. But this was, 84, man. This was like, you know, when we were all afraid of the Russians and World War III and stuff like that, you know, and so this movie like made a big impact on me. And I remember one time, I had this big creek out behind my neighborhood and we would go down there and play all the time. I think we talked about it like on the Forts episode that we did a long time ago. And, I may have told this story even, but there was a, like a dust storm that we get in Oklahoma every now and then. All this dust had blown up in the air and the dust is real red. So it was covering, you know, the sun and the sky like turned this real dark red. It was really weird. I never forget it. And these older kids that were with us were like, you know what that is? That's a nuclear war. Like the bombs have gone off, you know, and we're all going to die and stuff. And like we, you know, we were kids. I really thought that, you know, like we were under attack or something. And of course, it's that same time where we had all seen Red Dawn, you know, and I was like, this is it, man. Now we're the Wolverines, you know, but, you know, first I'm going to go home and get some Fruit Loops, get a snack, you
my
know,
my last meal
before the Ruskies show up. But, yeah, this was, really influential. I mean, it made a big impact on me.
Oh, absolutely. I would go camping as a kid, for a week with my dad and plus we had behind my house again, we talked about this. I talked about this on the Forts, episode where we had this thing we would call the back alley, but it was really just, there was a section where there was some, not really woods. There was a little bit of wooded area between the houses on the back side of the street, where the yard backyards met up, like where I live now, my backyard is butted right up to the, you know, people that live behind me.
Oh, you showed me this.
Yeah. I mean, you could drive, you could probably drive two cars down, side by side. And so we would always, you know, play back there and stuff. We're always playing war and this was huge for us. And here's the thing. I'm, you know, is a 9 year old or probably 10 year old kid when this, or probably 11 year old when it came on HBO, I remember talking to my brother and we'd be like, look, if this ever happens, we're going to load up and we're going to go to Allegheny. And I don't know what we were loading up because it was just my brother and I, and he was only 13, but right. You know, we would
our Play-Doh.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, no, because at the time, I mean, we had, you know, we had buck knives and, you know, Rambo knife and stuff like that. Canteens, you know, we would like fantasize about it happening. You know, we're 10, 11 yeah. years old, you know, we're, you know, now I'd be like, hell no. But at that time, you know, I thought, yeah, we could do that. We could live in the woods. We could live in the mountains because Allegheny State Park is like, you know, it's New York's part of the mountains in New York State, by Pennsylvania. They're like, I don't know, 2,500 feet at most, maybe, but, definitely to us looked like Colorado Rockies, you know?
Right, right.
So back then we wanted, you know, we wanted to go and have to survive like this and we would have lasted an hour or two maybe.
Oh my God. You know what? I put that in as a question to ask you is, you know, if something like this happened and I mean, you had to act right then, you know, I mean, like they're like, in the movie we see, Russian soldiers parachuting in, they start shooting up the school. You know, these guys have to act fast. They grab Jed's pickup. They drive to, one of their dads has a, is it actually a gun store or is it just like a supply store kind of thing?
It seemed like kind of more of a hunter campers with some other stuff kind of on the outskirts of town heading into the mountains. Yeah. That was right. That scene was awesome. And I loved it because I would always think of how I would just, what I would be grabbing if it was, you know, in that situation.
Yeah. But they grab their stuff and then they head to the mountains. They don't have a whole lot of supplies. You know, I mean, they have water. They have, and we see them eating cans of beans and stuff.
They don't have water. Remember? Cause he's got to get up there. Oh,
that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
My favorite line of that movie.
They just have the minimal stuff. And I was thinking, not, you know, in my area here, you know, and we find out that Jed and his brother have gone hunting. Their dad used to take them hunting and stuff. And so they're using a lot of the, skills that they were taught. But me personally, if I were to head up in the mountains of Colorado, even with the things they had, I think I could last about 90 minutes. I think that's it. When I could last till my iPhone battery dies.
Oh,
and then I'm out. And then I just put my arms up. I'd go marching down in like, well, you got me. I would text them. I'm like, but that's 1%. I give up. LOL. And then I would march into town. That's it for me.
Yeah, that scene was one of my favorite scenes as a kid. Again, just because I was like, oh man, they're grabbing lanterns and he's pulling out buck knives out in brand new boxes and putting them up there. And, you know, cause again, look at watching it as a kid. But then when I was watching it now for this one, for this episode, I was trying to pay attention to a little, there was some decent detail to things I thought in this movie, like the way they just were throwing things, piling them in the truck, you know, it wasn't all nice and neat. Like it was really made to feel rushed. You know, there was a couple things like that. Like when they, because, you know, they go into the mountains and one of the first scenes there's, you know, they need food and they're hunting. And I think that's when, what's his name? C. Thomas Howell's character. He kills the deer. And you know, that's when Jed and Matt tell him he's got to drink the blood, the character Robert, which then leads up because they tell him about this with the Indians and the spirit and you'll never be this, you know, they kind of like, you'll never be the same ever. But when he makes him drink the blood and you see like some steam coming off, did you notice that?
Yeah, it's very, I have an uncle that lives, down, he lives like hours. Well, I think the nearest town, maybe he could get to town in like half an hour if he had to, you know? But he does his own thing. You know what I mean? Like he will kill a deer and skin it and do all the stuff and prepare the meat at his house and put it in the freezer on his front porch and they will live off that, you know? And he does all those things. And it's a mentality where they don't, they appreciate what they can get off the land. You know what I mean? And they don't waste stuff. They don't. I remember one time I took the kids down there and Mason got this, they made this dinner for us. And it was like, you know, a scoop of beans and a little scoop of potato salad and some brisket and stuff like that. And deer meat chili. And he was like, don't tell the kids it's deer meat. And I was like, okay. And so Mason made this big giant plate of food, you know, and ate about half of it and then got up and my uncle was like, sit down, eat it, you know, and Mason had never heard anybody tell him that before. Like I wouldn't tell him that, you know, but he was like, listen, you know, here we appreciate the food that we get and we don't waste it, you know? And so, and it was a good lesson for him, you know? And so, they don't just kill animals, you know, they don't hunt for sport. They don't hunt for fun. He hunts because there's something getting close to his land, that's dangerous or because they need to eat, you know? And so that scene right there, you know, they're kind of passing that on. Like, listen, this deer died, but it's going to give us, you know, the substance we need right now. And so they kind of pass that tradition on. I like that scene.
Wow, you went deep with that. I just like the fact that the deer blood was steaming.
Maybe my story was steaming. I don't know. But,
you got deep. I thought it was just the setup for, like, yeah, this dude's going to go nuts at the end. And Matt tells him you're never going to be the same ever. But wow, O'Hara went deep on that one.
You know what? Right before this show, I drank 14 gallons of blood. So I'm I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
You know what I like about the beginning of the movie? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I like that that this movie starts. I mean, the action starts like 2 minutes in. There's no, I mean, it's in the opening credits, and you're in the classroom, and the teacher's giving this presentation, and then he's like, "What is going on out there?" And he sees the paratroopers coming in.
Hello, my friend.
Right. And he goes out there. Then they just start shooting them up. They shoot up the school and they shoot kids that are leaned up against the windows. And I mean, it kicks right off. So
yeah, there's no character. There's no meet the characters, no character buildup at all until you after get that later. Scene. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, with, I'm sure it's the same way with you with, when you watch movies, did you watch this with your son? With
no, Ethan? Every time we talked about doing it, it just didn't happen. And, I am going to, cause I think he'll like this.
Yeah. I put on 80s movies. Like, I tried to get my son to watch Karate Kid. Do you know how far it is in the movie before there's any karate? I mean, it takes a long time before you get to Miyagi and all. I mean, there's a lot of setup, you know? So this movie, I was like, hey, you're going to watch this movie. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Within 2 minutes, somebody gets shot because if they don't, you know, if it doesn't get them quick, they just don't have the attention span I think we had as kids. You know what I mean? So, but I like it that this is like this movie hits the ground running and takes off.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, Ethan, he loves the Karate Kid, but he'll be like, "Dad, you want to watch Karate Kid?" And I'm like, no, for that specific reason, I don't have the attention span anymore to sit and wait for things to kind of pick up, you know, there's too much character buildup at that point. But yeah, this one, I mean, it's great. And as a kid, loved it. And now I was like, yeah, you know what I was not looking forward to was when Powers Booth character, the Colonel, when they find him, I remember as a kid, I did not like that. I just, cause this movie, like you said, it's what, 2 hours long or close to 2 hours long. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like that kind of dragged out a little bit, but I guess they had to put that in. That was their way of kind of explaining how this all went about, how it came to be. Cause you know, you're watching this movie, you're like, really, this is going to happen. Like, how is this going to happen? But he kind of tells the strategy of how they, you know, the puzzle pieces that were put together so that this could happen.
You get, you know, in movies like this, you have to get exposition in somehow. You have to explain to the audience, whether it's through dialogue or some other way, you have to explain, you know, what's going on. In fact, in this movie opens with some screen titles, some title cards that explain, you know, basically the steps, what happened to get us into, you know, World War III starting. So, I'm sure it was difficult for the filmmakers or the writers, because you have these kids that are hiding in the woods. So they don't have any way of knowing what's going on outside. You know, they don't know about the war. They don't know any of that stuff. So, you know, I almost felt like the colonel, I think he serves two purposes. One, he's a plot element. I mean, he's there because then he can say, oh, this is what was happening with the war. And he explains it to the kids while he's explaining it, you know, to us, the audience. But the other thing I like about him is he is forced, you know, because of the situation, to treat the kids as equals. You know, I mean, so they work together. It's not like, you know, he takes over and he starts ordering people around. You know, he's like, hey, what do you guys got in mind? And they're the guys. I mean, the kids are the ones that have acquired the weapons and they've survived all this time, you know. And so, you know, he kind of becomes part of the group. He doesn't take over the group because this movie for me as a kid was really empowering. You know what I mean? Like the kids, you know, I don't know how old they are. I guess they're all teenagers, you know. Obviously Jed's a little bit older, but they're all in school. But they're the ones, I mean, they're taking on the foreign army.
Right.
You know, they've got the gun, they're surviving, they're doing all this stuff. So it would have ruined it for me as a kid if this grown up had shown up and been like, no, you stupid kids, this is what we're going to do instead. So it doesn't do that. They're still, you know, in charge because
I think at first he kind of is thinking that, not that he's going to take charge, mm-hmm. but all these kids, they think they're badass or whatever, but he quickly learns that, you know, they to say what they know what they're doing, but they're handling themselves.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, that scene where he's explaining like what happened in the war, like, how, you know, the Cuban army moved up from the south and all this stuff. If you go on, I'll send you a link to this. We can put it in the show notes, but I think it's on the Wikipedia page. Someone has made a map showing,
A strategy map, how it all happened?
Yeah, the U.S., like the different states are colored in. So you could see like, well, these states were foreign controlled and these were the, you know, he says like there's so many states that were free and this and that. So like Oklahoma is red in the map, which so we lost Oklahoma. Occupied territory is the term.
Yes, you know, as a kid, I didn't catch any of that. It was boring. I wanted to see him shooting up. So it was nice to watch it now and be like, okay, that's, you know, that's why he was there. That's why it wasn't, because as a kid, I'm just thinking, oh, great. Okay. The girl has a crush on him. She's sticking flowers in his lapel. And why are we doing this as a kid? You know, but now watching the movie and listening to what he's saying. But I did like how he at first, he's like these crazy kids up in the mountains, but then he could, you know, he helped them strategize together how they could go and you know, they kind of have their first mission.
Yeah. And that's a good point you brought up, that this movie does work on a couple of different levels. Like there's like when I was a kid, the level was, you know, oh, these kids kick ass and they're the Wolverines, you know, which by the way, do you know where Wolverines, why they kept yelling that, where it came from? I didn't catch this as a kid.
Oh, I believe it's their school mascot.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I did not catch that until I just watched it this last time.
Yeah, see, 11-year-old Sean got that one.
I forgot about that.
You're too busy. You're too busy getting deep with the blood.
Exactly. I was like, where can I get some blood to drink? But that scene that we talked about where they're heading into the mountains, they pull up in the pickup, they know they got to get out of town. And, it's one of their dads has this story, you know? So as a kid, you're like, oh, they need all these supplies and they get their supplies, which is obviously something that has to happen, you know, for the movie plot. But as an adult watching it, what you see is this older man who's kind of sacrificing himself and giving all these supplies to the kids, knowing, you know, that they're young, they have their whole lives ahead of them. So they get to leave, but he's like, no, I mean, cause as a kid, I was like, well, why doesn't he go with them? You know what I mean? Like, why doesn't he hop in the truck and escape with him? But you kind of see that he knows that he's too old for that fight.
Well, and he has a wife at home. He wants his son to get out, and he probably feels like he's got to stay to try and protect what family he has that doesn't have the option to get out right now. You know, and that's, and this is actually, it kind of ties back in another part that I never really caught as a kid was that the store ties back when they're, when the, what is it? Colonel Bella, I believe it was something like that.
Yeah.
When he's talking about they're going to, something to do with, the information that they had gotten was that this, the store would have all the information on who had guns in the town, who they were registered and stuff like that, so that they can go and group them. Cause at the local drive-in, wow, there's a retro thought. the drive-in is where they're kind of containing what I guess they would consider their troublemakers. They're, you know, people that would maybe, revolt against them. And I would have to imagine that a lot of them are the people with guns, but, and that's where they kind of noticed and the kids find out that that's why, his father was killed because he was aiding, guerrillas.
Yeah.
You know, and they knew that there was stuff missing. So yeah, you watch it now as an adult, you know that this isn't just that, you know, they flew in and dropped in on a parachute to, you know, break into America and take it over. There was thought into how these things work. So I like that as an adult, catching those kinds of things.
I was on the edge of my seat the whole time when the kids went back into town. You know, they come into town for information, which I guess is plausible that people would do that. I mean, they want to see if their family members are alive and all that, but they actually go up to this and it's like a concentration camp. It's like a propaganda camp. They're running these films and you know, trying to, I guess, like reprogram people. And they, like you said, they have all these people in the drive-in, you know, with a fence around them. And they go right up to the fence. They're like, hey, where's my dad? Where's my, you know, and they go get these people and stuff. But I was like, that's not the place to be.
Yeah.
If you're on but the run from the army.
But it was nice because I believe there was other people on that side of the fence. So like they knew people were talking to their family. You know, it wasn't like they just kind of snuck up and it would have been obvious.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I was just.
And that was, now that scene was something that I had just a little bit. I was like, all right, that makes no sense. When they're talking to their father, who is Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
Who played the part of their father, Mr. Eckert. You know, he's obviously a hardened man and has raised his kids a certain way. And he explains, now you know why. You know, now you know why I raised you and did the things I did, because now you can do this. You can, you know, I don't think he's expecting them to, you know, win a war or anything, but they can survive. Take care of each other and survive. Don't think of him. Tells them to go. And, but then they walk away and, you know, he starts yelling to them, you know, boys, avenge me. He's yelling it. Now, if I just, you know, basically he just said like, look, I ain't going to make it. I'm going to die. Go. Now my father's yelling, boy, like I'm coming back. Like, yeah, dad, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That was one of those things I kind of picked at.
It was, that scene was weird. First of all, I thought it was weird because he does it. He gives that speech just like what you said. He says, you know, I raised you this way. I was hard on you and all this stuff. But now, you know, I was preparing you for something like this. Okay. But if we don't go to World War III, then it turns out you were just the world's worst father. So, you know, I mean, it worked out good that he prepared.
Yeah. He's in the driveway. He's like, see, now them boys know. They just thought I was an asshole, but
I told you it for be them. World War III, you dummies.
Yeah. So it's kind of the show why these two, because you can tell from the beginning when they get to the mountains, you know, Jed basically says like, look, if you want to stay, because there was a little difference between the group. You know, you had Daryl who wanted to go back to town. And he was like the class president. So he was thinking of it like a politician, which his father's the mayor. So he's thinking of it that way. And, Jed is like, no, we're not going back. But if you plan to stay, like you can go, but if you want to stay, you're going to listen to me. Like I'm going to call the shots. And Matt says, you know, we've been doing it and you see the hunting scene. So you know that these kids have been raised a certain way, but not only does it set that up to show how they got to that point, but also sets up the end of the movie. the scene right. with Jed and Matt, kind of because he talks about, remember where I used to push you on the swing, and kind of builds up to that in the end.
Well, yeah, it's really, really good point where you're the class president, but when you go out to the woods, that doesn't mean crap.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you could go, I know calculus. Okay, well, good, you know, good luck eating a calculus sandwich while we're over yeah. here, you know, having deer chili or whatever. So, it's a good point where it's just like, you know, whenever, people say, you know, street smarts versus book smarts, you know what I mean? Like that he really thought he outranked them until he got out there. So, right. And yeah, like you said, that scene where he explains that he had raised the kids, you know, because the average, I mean, like if you take your kids and my kids and we set them out in the woods, you they're just
take
gonna
us.
Home.
Just take us.
Oh yeah, like I said, I'm dead before sundown. Really.
You and I will be boxing each other from, you know, up in trees, 20 feet away.
Here's what I would do after about 4 hours, like 2 a.m. when it's cold, I would be like, Sean, I forgive you if you have to kill me and eat me. Be like, that's it. That's how long I could last. Can you, you know, like I work at a place where sometimes, like I will get up and I'll just like at 2 p.m, I'll just go to the vending machine and get some Pop Tarts. Like I just had lunch at noon and I'm going to have dinner at 5:30, but I'm like, hey, you know what? I could have some Pop Tarts right now. I'm not going to make it in the woods that long.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to get Pop Tarts in the woods.
I'll tell you that. Yeah. I'm not eating bugs. Like you know, I have a list of too many things I won't do to make it too long in the woods.
Yeah. Well, we'll be roasting Rob O'Hara then.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a scene. I don't know how long they've been out in the woods. I mean, we see them in the winter. We see them. I mean, they've been out there for a long time.
They show, you know, like some month changes.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
time lapse, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, because we don't really know when in the school year they were, but yeah, I mean, they definitely go through some different seasons. There's a convoy that goes by and it drops some boxes of fresh food, and the kids at first think it may be a trap, you know, but eventually they go down and they check it out and it's, you know, it's was it a trap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then, yeah, that's right. That's when,
well, before I do want to talk about that scene because I like that scene. It's kind of leading to the end. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I had in the notes was about whenever I watch these, you know, any movie and there's some guy or two people or whatever, where they're up against a bunch of people and they have like a pistol. And then they shoot a guy who has like an M16 and then they just step over him and carry on through the building with a pistol. And I always go, why are you not picking up the M16? Right. You're carrying a pistol. Right. You could put the pistol.
We learned that from video games.
Yeah. You know, like you could put your pistol in your pocket and carry the M16. You know, so we don't see them really grabbing things after some sort of conflict, but just because you always see a constant supply of like RPG or what is it, an RPG?
Yep.
The little rockets, you know, they have, they're like Russian AK-47s. You know, I like that they always had, ammunitions and that, I didn't have to see them grabbing. I knew, like, I was like, all right, because of the way they made their characters, so efficient at everything. I really like that. So then we get to the scene that you're talking about and I think it was, a setup. I didn't think it was as a kid. I wondered how this all happened, but go ahead and kind of lay out the scene and then I'll give my reason why I think it was a setup.
Well, basically, so there's a convoy and then this, a big box of food drops off. And what I was going to say is, you know, we were talking about like, you know, thinking about living in like, if think about like not eating for a day. You know what I mean? Like how hungry I would be if I didn't eat for 24 hours mm-hmm. or, you know, like we're so used to if you skip a meal, maybe not a meal. By the time I skip two meals, I'm really hungry, you know? And so they've been eating cans of beans. They've been eating, you know, anything they could find in the woods, you know, deer meat that they're cooking on this campfire. So, I mean, that is like, they've tried to tempt them with all these things, you know, going back to rescue people, going back for their families, going, you know, for all these different things. But that's the thing that gets them. And I don't blame them for being tempted by that. You know what I mean? Like how good when they start eating that fruit, and you know that they've just gone without that stuff for so long.
Well, he sends, come on, dude, how can we not talk about the little like squirrel noise that Patrick Swayze makes? I remember that as a kid being like, that's so cool. And I try to recreate it. He does it like 5 times in that scene. 4 out of the 5, he doesn't need to do it because, you know, Jennifer Grey's character is already out in the open. So, but he just keeps doing it because I think they're like, yeah, that's a really cool sound. It makes them seem like they're Green Berets or something. Like they're special right. forces. He's like, whatever he does, to get the fruit. This is why I think it was definitely a trap, because so basically these guys are getting a reputation in the town, the Wolverines. They're mm-hmm. you know, tagging everything, all the tanks and everything, Wolverines, this and that. So they know there's some sort of resistance out there, and so they bring in another like, I don't know if he's not a general or captain, but they bring in another guy that is he Nicaraguan or is he?
Yeah, I think so.
So they bring this guy in and he starts giving a little speech in looks to be the town hall. And, he's talking about how you have to be a hunter, and he is a hunter to catch Wolverines. He's doing this whole spiel. So when this scene happens, shortly after they get the food and they say, let's get back up to the rock real quick. And they're being quick about it. They're up on the rocks eating all this food. You start hearing a chopper, and it's kind of, and it's another thing that I like with detail. Patrick Swayze's character is looking all around, and he keeps looking at different parts of mountainside. So basically saying he doesn't know where the sound's coming from because it's echoing right. off of all the canyon. So he doesn't know where it's coming from. And then all of a sudden it comes up and starts shooting. And we have this huge scene. Jennifer Grey's character gets shot right in the beginning of that from the helicopter, which I'm surprised that she survived that. But for as long as she did, C. Thomas Howell's character, he kind of just gives up and gets shot up. But when this scene ends, you know, there's three, like, I mean, would those be like Flying Fortress helicopters? I mean, these things were huge, and there was three of them, and they got inside it. They shot one inside with an RPG, but I don't think that it put it down. But that guy gets out at the end of that scene when they're going to find if there's any survivors or anything. And I'm thinking, how would those helicopters just happen to stumble upon where they are with him? And I think it was a trap. I think it was.
Yeah, it could definite. Be. And especially, like what you said, being in the canyon, you know what I mean? So they set it up in an area where specifically it would be hard to tell which direction that the helicopters were coming from.
Well, yeah. And they knew that they were hitting convoys, mm-hmm. you know, cause there was a certain point where they were like, look, we can't have anybody out. When they were up in the mountains and they killed the three of the guys there, and they're like, we can't send anybody out with less than like a convoy. Was this after, cause we didn't talk about, Darren's character, Daryl, and, his father, who is the mayor, who's kind of, he's definitely not in cahoots with the leaders of the, Nicaraguan and Russian army, but he's working with them because he's the mayor and he's trying to do what he can to kind of get through this or whatever. And they know that his son is out there with the Wolverines. They know who these guys are by this point. And, we see a scene where you see a bunch of guys in like white snow outfits, which I thought was so cool. And I wanted one.
Oh yeah.
And you know, they got like a tracking device, and it ends up that Daryl ended up going into town. And he got caught because he went to probably see his father, and they made him swallow something that they could track. And so they, after we have a conflict and the Wolverines win, they're holding the device and just happen to be like, oh, it's beeping. It's coming from here. It's on Daryl. And they discover that he was the traitor. And then I caught too this time, you know, they asked him like, why did you go into town? You know, and he said, cause you told me not to, because Daryl and Jed, you know, I think they were the same age. Cause I think they're on football together or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, so there was a little bit of headbutting there, and I don't think he liked being told what he could and couldn't do. And he says, that's why he went and he got caught. I thought as a kid that he purposely went in to give them up, and it wasn't the case. At least they don't make it out to be.
I thought the same thing when I was a kid. And obviously, like you said, we find out that he gets caught and they made him, and I always thought this too, like they made him swallow whatever that tracking thing is. And then I guess they started following him right away. Cause I don't know how long it takes to poop out a tracking thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think they were right after him, or why wouldn't they just kind of follow him back anyways?
But this is a plot thing of the whole movie. I'd be interested to hear what you have to think about it. But the Wolverines could have survived forever out there if they had left well enough alone. And by that, I mean, if they had just gone out there to hide, you know, and moved, and now they do get discovered by the three, soldiers that they end up killing and that radio their position, but they could have kept moving or whatever. But the Wolverines, they're not content to do that. They're not content with hiding and being on the move and running away. Instead, they go on the offensive.
Yeah.
They start going into town and blowing stuff up and, you know.
Well, I guess you could kind of relate that to like a World War II, you know, where you had the French resistance underground, probably could have done the same thing, lived longer that way, but they were trying to, you know, take back what was theirs and get Nazis out. So, you know, I could, cause I kind of questioned that myself watching it, but I thought, you know, how old were people that in World War II that did that or in any conflict, you know, I'm sure there are kids, younger people that would be, this is ours. And they had already been defeated in the mind that this wasn't, you know, no one was going to win. They probably weren't going to survive. So I think they were trying to defend what they thought was theirs. You know, they had pride in it, but I think they still could have lasted even longer than they did. And so let's kind of start wrapping it up and talk about the ending. I really didn't honestly have any problems with this film until the end. And it was when Matt was talking to Erica, and I think it was Danny, and basically telling him, look, you guys are going to go and do this, you're going to do that, and me and Jed are going to give you covering fire and make a commotion over here. And they're like, well, just come with it, you know. And they're like, what did he say? Jed and I are washed up or something like that. Like basically he told him like, yeah, someone's got to die so you can live. And that's when I was like, all right, come on.
Yeah. It got a little unrealistic towards the end. First of all, when you have this big speech, like, where he's just saying, you know, I'm all washed up. You're washed up at 18 or 19, you know, you know what I mean? Like I understand that they just got beat down. They got tired of the fight or whatever, but it seemed like there might have been other alternatives.
Like get out of there. Just leave at that point.
Head north.
But you're going to kill yourself. So that's when I had problem with this movie and not even that much. I mean, it's just, I was just like, all right, this is kind of, you know, this has gone a little too far.
Just a little washy.
Right. But, you know, like I said, they kind of were setting up that they had already decided they were going to never, you know, they weren't going to make it out. You know, how are you going to know who won? How will anybody know that won? You know, just being all dramatic and stuff like that. And
yeah, it was pretty deep philosophical comments from a couple of kids.
Yeah. You know? Especially, I guess just to jump back real quick, when they do find out that Daryl was the guy who basically led them there, you know, and Jed is like, look, we got to kill him. So there was Daryl, and then there was a Russian soldier, and he asked me, want blindfold, stuff like that. And, Jed ends up shooting the Russian soldier because he just won't shut his mouth. He keeps mouthing off to him. So he shoots him, no problem. And then he's able to shoot Daryl. And this scene, as a kid and even as an adult watching it, was like kind of like, oh man, it gets you. Cause you know,
yeah,
Daryl is like now pleading for him not to shoot him and not to shoot him. And you can see, I thought Patrick Swayze played this part and is following right after this, really convincing. And, he just couldn't do it. And Robert C. Thomas Howell's character, just because he drank the blood and, he's different now. He kind of went off the edge, just shoots him like it's nothing and looks at everybody like, yeah, I just did it. But I thought Patrick Swayze's, acting was really good in that part. And then after, when he was looking at the picture and the way he was, you know, he was crying, I was like, man, I remember crying like that sometimes when I was a kid.
Well, I read that the original story, when they first wrote the plot, it said that it was similar to Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
And so there would have been a lot more about the hierarchy of who's in charge of the group and the kids turning on one another. And you could see how it could be that kind of movie. And then basically most of that got cut out. So like you said, we see a little bit of that between Jed and Daryl, right? And then we see, you know, during that scene, we see C. Thomas Howell, you know, basically take over, you know what I mean? That role or whatever. So
yeah,
there's a little bit of that left in the movie, but, you know, for the most part, they're all pretty much equal. But, so I want to talk about the last part of the movie, basically like what you said, they go to the park, and they're going to launch one last offensive, you know, against the army. And it's a cool, if you've ever played games like Call of Duty or Ghost Recon or whatever, there's a scene like this at every game where you're taking on the army and there's a train in the middle and there's all this stuff going on. So it's a really cool, thing. And then right at the end, boy, I mean, we're getting into deep spoiler territory at this point.
I think we're okay. I think we're safe.
But, one of the brothers is already dead or dying or dying. Dead.
Yeah. He gets shot up by the hunter.
He's mortally wounded.
Yeah, Matt.
And so, Jed is carrying him back. And so, as he's carrying him, he turns and he sees the enemy, the hunter, right?
No, not the hunter. Patrick Swayze kills the hunter.
Yeah.
He sees, Colonel Bella, who's been kind of the main character on the opposing side. And you see a brief little before this all happens where he's writing a letter to his wife and pretty much saying like, I'm giving my resignation. I can't do this. There's no point in this. This isn't a revolution I'm fighting for. This is a takeover. And then, right. then all hell breaks loose and he's got to go back out there. But yeah, go ahead. He kind of encounters him.
Yeah. So we've got this moment where he's standing there with a machine gun. He turns around and he sees the kids, the brothers, and one's holding the dying brother. And he basically, you know, makes this hand signal, he motions and just tells him to keep walking.
Yeah.
You know, he could have killed him right there, you know, and I don't think anybody, no matter what side you're on in a war, I don't think you want to shoot two unarmed teenagers.
No, but I don't think you would have let him go.
I don't either.
You know, maybe he wasn't shooting him as he's carrying him, and he doesn't know it's his brother, but I don't think he would have let him go. But they, you know, you could see how this was all not sitting well with him anyways. He makes comments when he is doing like a body count of his own men and recalling seeing that, at different points. So this wasn't a war, I don't think, that he was backing. You know, he was just leading it, but it wasn't like his home where I think he had to fight in some sort of revolution. So it wasn't connecting with him. And they kind of build up to that. Like I said, with a letter to his wife, he tells her, I'm going to resign. But I still think he would have been like, yeah, I'm going to resign after I take these two guys over to the brink, you know?
Right. Who just shot all my friends.
Yes. Yeah. 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 but he lets him go. And that's when Patrick Swayze takes his character to the playground, which is what his father references. Remember when he used to push you there and he's like, I'll hold you and, you know,
yeah,
comforting him, saying dad's coming. So, that's basically it.
But it wraps with a scene at Freedom Rock.
Yeah.
The rock where they, it's a big rock and they've been writing the names of people that, that died or whatever. It becomes a tribute and that kind of bookends the movie where at the beginning, is it Leah Thompson?
Yeah. She's, her character is reading it. Yeah. Cause she got away with, Danny.
Yeah. And so then they're at the end and they show that too. And I'm not going to lie. I was choked up when they were, they were reading that, you know, the inscription
as a kid or as a kid or now.
No, like 2 days ago. Like as a kid, I don't think I was choked up. I was all Wolverine, you know. But when they were reading that, the older I get, anytime I hear something that's like, we just went, you know, when I came up to see you, and visited you guys up there, you know, we had gone to, we spent a week in Washington, D.C. We went to the Smithsonian, Museum of American History. And if you go through this back room, you get to see the American flag, the big giant American flag that was waving that inspired, the national anthem. And I sat in there and I could feel my throat, like that lump growing in there when you're just staring at that. And there's pictures of it. Like there's repairs where it had been shot with cannons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you just know that flag was there. And it's just this emotional thing now, you know, when I see that, like that level of, patriotism, something like that. And so, I mean, you know, there's the part of me that, I mean, I know it's a movie and I know that's Leah Thompson and in a few years, she's going to be hooking up with a duck. But when they're reading that plaque and it's like, here's the people that died and they fought for the freedom and all. And I'm like, yeah, they did, man. You know, and I was just like, I mean, that last thing got me right there. You know, I thought it was that part was a good ending. I thought it was just,
yeah. I didn't have the same.
You didn't emotional. Like the Freedom Rock thing?
No, it didn't hit me that way. I was like, yeah, dog that over.
Passed away. I went outside and I wrote his name right on the sidewalk. Started Freedom Sidewalk. That's the end of the movie. Now let's talk a little bit about the cultural impact. Do you have anything else you want to say about the movie?
No. I think we covered it.
We got it. There was a play set where you got to shoot children. No, there's not.
There's I was like, whoa, I didn't see that in the show notes.
There's no play sets. There's nothing. I mean, how do you market this? You know, I mean,
now it'd be t-shirts with someone holding like a Russian AK. And it would say Wolverines, you know.
Yep. You'd have a Wolverine canteen.
And then you go to
kids, you know?
Yeah. You go to Spencer's and there'd be like an old Chevy pickup with the hood up and it would say, now piss in the radiator.
Right. You press the button on the gas tank and it goes, personal radiator. Like that. I checked eBay. I checked all my places. There's nothing. You can movie posters and DVDs.
That's what I was going to say. You probably could grab a movie poster.
Yep, that's about it. So not a lot of memorabilia out there for this movie. If you're a fan of the movie, I guess you can make your own. You could just write Wolverine on a shirt, walk around and kill a commie for mommy. I don't know. I don't know.
Is that what the t-shirt will say?
Yeah, that's on the back.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, well, that's all right, though.
Have you seen did you see the remake of this?
I did not. Nicole rented it one time, and I think I might have been podcasting. I came down, and it was a scene where I think it was they were lining up to execute some. That's all. And I was like, you know what? I don't even want to watch this. I don't want to watch it.
Yep, I didn't see it. I have not. I haven't seen it. I just this for me. This movie is it sums up that period. Like I said, from the 80s when we were kids and we wanted to be in charge of something, you know, we didn't want to be the weak kids that, you know, I mean, these were the kids that saw the situation. They acted and they become the heroes, you know? So for me, I relate that movie to that.
Yeah.
And you know, the teens being in charge of something. So watching a new version now just doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. And watching this, I still have no desire to watch it and see how it compares or I just don't.
Yep. In the early, throwback reviews days, we were tossing around different ideas for shows. And there was one where you'd said one thing we could do is watch, the remakes of some of the classic 80s movies, and we've never done that. And I think it's because neither one of us want to watch, remakes.
Yeah, it sounded like an interesting concept for a show. Like, hey, let's watch this, and then we'll kind of, no, because it's going to be the same thing. Probably 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 times. It's going to be,
right.
That sucked.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We could do the show right now. We'll just say that all the remakes suck.
Yeah. Nicole, my wife, said it was pretty good, but I mean, she doesn't have the, the attachment to this movie that I did.
We'll see what she has to say when I send C. Thomas Howell to come see her.
Yeah.
Traitor.
What was I going to say now? Shoot, I lost my train of thought, I was going to say, I'm hoping that we kind of redeemed ourselves after the Weekend at Bernie's episode. I'm really curious, and if anyone wants to let us know what you thought, because we really kind of rode that movie pretty hard. none of us, you, Kevin, and myself, we just were like, yeah, that movie was not what we remembered it to be, or we didn't enjoy it the way we remembered it. So hopefully we redeemed ourselves with this. Not that we did it for that purpose. It just happens. We had talked about doing this movie anyways, and we kind of shuffle things around. Rob, I'll be like, Rob, what movie are we doing? And Rob will be like, all right, well, let's do this one. I'll be like, all right. And then I'll send him a message like, you know what? Let's do this one instead. I'll think about it. And I'll be like, let's do this one.
I'm glad we did this one, and I'm glad that it held up. I was afraid when we went back, because I hadn't seen this in a long time. And so I was afraid, when we watch some of these movies, I thought, oh man, is there going to be like big logic things that are going to, that I'm going to see now that I didn't see as a kid, or is there going to be stuff that they do? And for the most part, I thought it's pretty realistic. And I thought it was, like I said, I see why that scene at the ending, is a little bit, just a little bit too mushy, I guess, based on everything else that they had done throughout the movie.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I thought it held up. And also, one question I usually ask you, and I think we already kind of covered this, even though this was PG-13, I didn't really understand why.
I would have to say for the violence, maybe when they, shot Daryl and the Russian soldier, and even when they found that the three people are on the mountainside and they saw him, and they didn't show Jed shoot him in the head, but the guy turned his head like, all right, just do it, and then you hear the gun. I mean, maybe for that, I guess, because I don't recall the language being all that horrible.
No, I didn't think so at all. I watched it with my 13-year-old, and then I thought, at the time I thought I would have let my 10-year-old watch this too. I didn't think there was anything in there.
I don't know. It's stuff now is way worse.
Oh yeah.
I enjoyed it. And, like I said, I'm going to watch it with Ethan anyways. I think he'll really enjoy it. I'm not going to watch it with my youngest boy or my daughter, but with him, I'll watch it. I mean, he's probably playing some video game right now with his buddy or something. So
exactly. But, yeah. My kids have seen a lot worse on the PlayStation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, is that it? Is that all you got for this one? That's all I got,
man.
All right.
I feel like it inspires me to want to go stay in the woods. I don't think I'll probably do it.
Yeah. I don't think you will either.
No, I watch too many horror movies.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to close this one up. I enjoyed it. And, Rob, you got anything you want to plug or anything like that? What you got going on right now?
I'm starting a new show. And it is called Multiple Sadness.
Oh, okay.
And you can find it on multiplesadness.com. That's it's a reference. It is a line that's, uttered in the old, really bad horror movie called Witchboard, where the spirit attacks this guy's car. And then he looks out the window. He sees his car has been attacked. And the guy, he's like a surfer guy. And he goes, whoa, multiple sadness, which my buddy and I, we used to always watch. We would go rent all these really awful movies like, you know, from the 70s and 80s and stuff like that, even some earlier ones like black and white ones, and we would watch them. And of course, we would always get like these dumb catchphrases, you know, from the movies. And, you know, so we would always say like, I mean, I guarantee if I called Jeff right now, there's a 50-50 chance that one of us would say multiple sadness to one another. We just picked up these phrases and stuff. So that's basically what it is. I'm just going to be talking about, some of these old dumb movies, you know, more horror kind of stuff, more bad movie type stuff. You know, I'm going to try to see if I can get Jeff to come on it maybe, or, you know, do some stuff like that. But,
well, that sounds like fun when you plan on having your first one out, or.
First one's already out.
Oh, it is?
And yeah, and I covered Microwave Massacre, which is a I mean, it really, that kind of sums up what that whole show is going to be. So
we'll give that URL out again. I'll put it in the show notes too.
Okay, yeah, it's just multiplesadness.com, and I just got accepted to iTunes earlier today. So, it should be
RobOHara.com. Probably you have a link.
Yeah. If you go to, RobOHara.com/podcasts, it's got links to all the shows and stuff that I'm on. And of course, it's got a link to, throwbacknetwork.net, your home for quality retro podcasts.
Sweet. Check it out.
What else? Hey, did you do, you told me the other day you were going to do an interim average runner. Yeah, I know, because you were on vacation and stuff. Did you do that?
Yeah. Well, we actually recorded an episode, and I had some hardware issues, and I had to scrap the episode. So, like, I hadn't had one out since probably towards the end of May, around Bernie's, which was my marathon recap. And so when I was on vacation, I took a run one morning. I was just, you know, walking after my run on the beach, and I thought, I'll just record something. So I did like a 5-minute episode, just kind of real quick. So we're actually going to be recording a little less than a week from when we're recording now. We're recording on the 14th of July. So should be out soon. It's just, again, it's a scheduling thing. You know, just trying to get together with Jason, went around his schedule. Mm-hmm. His son's got soccer and, you know, stuff like that, but it's definitely still alive. I really wanted to get that 5-minute one out, just cause I want to throw someone out there, just let people know, like, yeah, I know, you know, it's a new podcast, but it's not dead. Cause that happens a lot. People start podcasts and they just kind of just disappear. But yeah, Average Runner podcast, .com, or you can go to the network. It's down the bottom for sponsors. It is a sponsor of the Throwback Network. But yeah, it'll be coming out soon. We'll get something out there. We want to talk about running. So if you're a runner thinking about running, give it a listen. The Average Runner podcast.
Sweet.
So, so that's going to wrap that up. As far as our show goes, you can find us at throwbackreviews.com. You can also find us at throwbacknetwork.net. Your home for what?
Your home for quality retro podcasts.
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook. Just look up Throwback Reviews Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, at Throwback Review. It's kind of just my normal handle. I do my running stuff or whatever. So it's kind of like you're just following me. And that is it for a social. If you want to get a hold of us, if you want to let us know what you thought of Weekend at Bernie's, if you thought we were too harsh on it, or what you thought of this episode, or maybe a movie you want us to do or something like that, you can send us an email to feedback@throwbackreviews.com. And you can even call our voicemail. Call it anytime you want. It's 716-243-2709. And all those will be in the show notes. So, that's it, Rob. I don't think we have even discussed what we're doing next. I think we talked about that. We weren't going to say it because I do change my mind so much. So it will be a surprise, but hopefully I'm going to say we're probably going to do one a month. I think that would be probably the smart thing to suggest. I don't think we can really, at this point now in the summer, get any more than that out. So we'll probably have a new episode out in early August, I would think. Gives us some time to figure out what movie we're going to do. Maybe when we do figure it out, Rob can post a little teaser as to what the movie is on the Facebook page.
Sure.
People can try and guess if they want as to what it's going to be.
Or you head over there and give us some suggestions too.
Yeah.
Never know.
And hey, if you do like the show, please head over to iTunes. Give us a review. That always helps us move up in the rankings and let other people find us that are looking for retro themed podcasts. So, all right, Rob. Well, it was fun. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Man, had a blast as always. Had a blast with this movie and catching up with you, and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, me too. So until the next time, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send us an email at feedback@throwbackreviews.com or leave us a message on our voicemail at 716-243-2709. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/throwbackreviewspodcast and Twitter @throwbackreview. And don't forget, we're also part of the Throwback Network. Go to throwbacknetwork.net to find more retro podcasts.